Hey, this is Chris. Hope you're doing well, and welcome to Popcorn Finance, the show where we discuss finance and about the time it takes to make a bag of popcorn. Have you ever read a book that's just stuck with you? For me, that book is The Year of Less, written by Kate Flanders. The book begins with her journey of trying to live with fewer things and challenging her spending habits, but it ends up becoming this like really in-depth look at all the ways that our interactions with money affect who we become as people. And, you know, I ended up just loving this book so much that I asked Kate to come and join me on the podcast a few years ago. I really loved your book because at first, when I picked it up and I saw the cover, I saw The Year of Less, and I was like, oh, this seems interesting because it sounds like you're going to just not be spending money for a year. And I want to kind of see what that experience is like. When I actually got into the book, I found out it was more than that. I pulled a couple of quotes from your book, things that kind of really stood out to me and just things I thought about after I finished reading it. And especially on this side of talking about like the emotions and how that plays into everything. There's one quote. It said, "One of the greatest lessons I learned during these years is that whatever you're thinking of binging is usually because some part of you or your life feels like it's lacking, and nothing you drink, eat, or buy can fix it." I really felt that because there's times in life where you feel like you're kind of grasping for something and you're looking for something to make you happy or fulfill you, you know, whether it is financially, you go out like on a buying spree, or even if it's like with food. With me, I know that's something I do. Like if I'm like feeling down, I'll go grab something to eat, to, you know, feel better. But this is always because there's something else behind the scenes that's causing you to do that. And you're trying to feel something else that's bothering you or something you feel that you need. And I don't know, what were your thoughts when you wrote this part of your book?
That was my intention for the entire book. Like before I even got started, I wrote a book proposal where you basically just outline everything that you're going to say in the book. I wrote that at the very end of it. And I said, if people were to take nothing else from the book or only one thing, like I just want it to be this. And it is that thought that like whenever you're thinking of binging on anything, that something else is usually going on. And my hope with it was that people would start to pay attention. And I mean, with the book as a whole too, really coming at it from a place of trying to remove some of the judgment and shame and guilt that we all have when we do maybe binge or spend money on the wrong thing or whatever. Because for starters, I can't judge anyone. I've made lots of mistakes. And then once we start paying attention to these things, our actions, our thoughts, like then we can create change. And the change being in that one, that it, you know, once you start paying attention, maybe you can actually just strip things back and start seeing what's really going on. Like I had never done that before. I had always acted on impulse. And now I'm like probably mindful to a fault. Like I'm very slow to move on a lot of things. But I would rather be on this side of it now because I'm so much more self-aware than I ever used to be.
There's another quote in your book where you're talking specifically about, you know, how your friends reacted to the fact that you were going to really limit your spending for a year. You said, "I didn't think anyone would care that I quit shopping, but I also never got mad at my friends when they started making comments that expressed otherwise, because I knew the truth, which was that I had left them too." It's interesting because there's another example of how money is intertwined in different ways. It's not just about how our budget is impacted, but also how we relate to other people in our lives through spending money, you know, going out, whether shopping or eating together, all these things that we do that end up costing money. I guess I was surprised too, because I didn't really think about that until I read this, that the way I change my budget, the way I change my spending could trickle out into these other aspects of my life and how I relate and interact with other people.
Yeah. I mean, it's interesting because my first example of really experiencing that is obviously when I quit drinking. So I stopped drinking when I was 27. And you very quickly realize that a lot of your friendships are going to change when you do something like that. Like not even just because I was drinking often, but because drinking is so culturally normal. Mm-hmm. So then you're like literally the only sober person in the room. But then in lots of changes I've made, like in switching to a vegetarian diet, you're slightly the odd one out. Like there's a lot of people who are vegetarians, but the majority I would say are still meat eaters.
Yeah.
But in the shopping, I really just didn't think anyone would care until I realized how many conversations we have about shopping. So it wasn't just people wanting me to shop with them. Like that came up a couple of times, but it was more that I finally was able to pay attention and, like, from an outside perspective, see how often we're saying things to each other like, hey, where'd you get that pair of shoes? Or, oh my gosh, this store has 50% off everything right now. We should go. Even like how we're influencing each other on social media by sharing pictures of our homes. I never realized how often that kind of stuff came up until I had nothing to say. And then I realized, oh, it's so normal. And I keep noticing it this year, especially. I've been noticing it a lot at different events I go to where there's like a sales pitch as part of it. Like I went to this, it was kind of pitched as like a wellness creativity retreat or something. And every single morning we were told about the gift shop, right? For starters, a gift shop shouldn't even exist at a place like this, in my opinion.
Right.
I guess I kind of get why it's there, but also like, let it just be there and don't pitch it.
Exactly.
So yeah, it's wild. Now I think you'll notice it even more.
People are always trying to sell something to you. You see a lot of that around. One thing I've been thinking about a lot lately, and it was something that I read in your book as well. And I'll just read the quote here. It says, "The truth I was learning was that we couldn't actually discover what we need until we live without it." I think that was really powerful, because it's one of those things where you have to give yourself time to think about the things you have in your life. I think for most of us, we just live busy lives. We go to work, we run errands. We don't give ourselves enough time to really think about what's going on in our lives, what we really care about, why we do the things we do. And I thought that was like really interesting about that you learned by giving up so much, by giving up so many items and giving up buying so many things, that it really gave you an opportunity to think about your habits and the things you own and the things you do, and if you really need them in your life at all. And like, how long into the process did you even think about this, or did this like thought come up?
I mean, it probably took about 7 or 8 months for me to have that thought. There's two parts of it. One is that it really taught me, and is something I hold on to still, to only buy things when I feel a real need for it. So it means I have to have like felt uncomfortable living without it. It can be things like when my rain jacket eventually wears out, which it will, because that's a thing that happens in the Pacific Northwest. When my sweater starts getting wet underneath, okay, well, then I will go get a new rain jacket. When you live in a new place for the first time, like, don't buy everything up front that you think you're going to need. Really live in the place and actually figure out what you need. You'll feel it. Every home has these quirks about them that you sometimes need to buy a thing for, and that's going to be different everywhere. So don't just like go out and buy all these things you think you need. Live in it and be okay with not having everything right up front. I didn't have a couch for the first 3 months that I lived here. It's just to show, like, I mean, it would have been a lot more comfortable, but I didn't need it. It wasn't this essential thing that had to be in my life. And then the other part to take it further is that there are a lot of people who only ever live this way. Like, they can only ever afford to live that way. They can only buy things as they need them. And even then, they can't always afford it. And so I think the whole experiment, even though you could only take it to so many depths in one book, but that has come up for me even more so, like the whole minimalism movement, all this stuff. There's just a lot of different angles with it that, like, we can't give answers for everyone, but I think it showed me that there are ways so many other people are living, and to like really get out of my own head and my own world and just see what else is going on in this world.
You can go out and grab a copy of Kate's book, The Year of Less, over at kateflanders.com. Kate is spelled C-A-I-T, by the way, just in case you were wondering. Or you can just click the link that I have for you in the show notes. As always, I appreciate you all joining me here for yet another bag of popcorn. I hope you have an amazing rest of your week, and I'll talk to you soon.
Yeah, boy, keep it popping like Mary Poppins.